strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, I want to remind you, there's a lot of people struggling right now. Food prices are still very high. There are a lot of families still have extreme needs. During the summer months, you know, our population drops, which means more of us need to pitch in and help some of those families. Right now, we are working with St. Mary's Food Bank. Gatos and Chad have their Food Bank Fridays going on right now. Please make a donation if you can. Every dollar buys five meals. It stretches very far, but they are in great need. Just text the word food to 411-923 to make a donation. That's food to 411-923. Support Food Bank Fridays presented by the UPS Store. Thanks in advance for doing that. Crime surge. I talk about this crime and punishment. I do these compare and contrasts all the time, and I don't know if people are getting tired of it or if it's just starting to sink in with people. I think we all want a great place to live. We just may have different ways of believing how to get there. We have seen that ideology, and I'll admit there's a lot of things that sound good in theory. When you talk about socialism or especially communism, it sounds like a great idea, and there have been people that they've tried it, you know. They've tried living in a commune. By that definition, living in a commune, I will tell you that in a church setting, communism works. What I mean by that is if you're in a church, if you're involved in a church, the way a flourishing church works with finances is everybody volunteers. Nobody knows what the other person makes or does. And the people of means and wealth, they give a lot of money to the church. And if there are people that are in need at the church, their needs are met. There as many churches have something called the POD, the pastor of the day. And their job, when people walk into the church and say, I can't pay my electric bill, I can't pay my rent, I don't have enough gas in my car to get to work, my refrigerator is empty, that pastor of the day has an account that they can draw from. And they will assess the need and fill the need on behalf of the people of the church from money that was given to them from church members. And that's in essence, that's what communism is supposed to look like. That's that ideological place that people want to be. Everybody serves each other's needs and everybody donates their time and they bring their skill set in and they bring their passions in, and it makes the whole community a better place. And it sounds fantastic until you try to do it in practice and you make it a requirement. And you take from those that have to give to those that don't. And they say that everybody's going to be equal and no one is going to be above the other. And you find out that there are just a few elites and everybody else is equally poor. It's everywhere it's ever been tried. I've talked about this on so many different occasions. There are things in human nature. You are going to see criminals in a wealthy society. You're going to see criminals in a poor society. There are people that are going to be honest as the day is long that have nothing. They would give you the shirt off their back and they wouldn't steal a bite of food if they were from you if you were starving. And there are other people that have quite a bit that are just dishonest and deceitful people. Human nature. We live in a society where we are saying what we want in our society is one where we live by a set of rules that we agree upon and we have law and order. We don't take the law into our own hands. Now, I'll be honest with you. There are certain situations where I think, you know, you settle your differences between yourself. When you're a kid, when kids get in a fight, let them fight. Fight it out. Shake hands when it's over. Walk away. I love the way hockey does business. I like the sport of hockey for that reason. Settle it on the ice. Do your 2 minutes in the penalty box. Let's move on with this game. I think that it's a good way to do things. I have no problem with that. But when we're talking about criminal offenses, when we're talking about these kinds of things, we don't settle between ourselves. We have a law and order society. The city of Phoenix, and I'm not talking about this city council or recent city councils necessarily causing the problem. But when you go back in the city of Phoenix, back to the 2009, 2010 time frame, when the economy decimated the state of Arizona, when the economic fall off did, and Phoenix was in big financial trouble. The unions, the Phoenix Police Union, which is known as PLEA, it's the largest one that represents most of the street cops, PLEA, and then the Phoenix Firefighters Union, they sat down with city leadership and they made a good faith effort. And they said, we don't want you to lay off any cops or firefighters. We will agree to a hiring freeze and we will also agree to a pay cut. And they did. They gave back real compensation to protect jobs. Some other things happened in the interim, but what's happened in the city of Phoenix is we have seen immense growth and we did nothing to replenish those police officers for an extended period of time. Firefighters, the same thing. And what we saw was a city that was exploding in population and a public safety department that wasn't growing with it. We've gotten so far behind the eight ball now, and now we're faced with something different. Now, to be a firefighter, a paramedic, I don't know about their recruiting. I don't know how hard it is for them to recruit. I don't know if they're having problems recruiting. But I know the police are. I know that the job has changed. I know the perception of the job has changed. And people don't want to sign up for a job where they're despised by some of the communities they patrol and all of those things. So you add to the fact that they haven't added enough people now that they can't find a lot of people. But the city of Phoenix is going to try to add 564 police officers. That is a lofty goal. They're going to have to do recruiting in a lot of very creative ways. They're going to have to go way outside of the state, whether you're going to get lateral moves and officers that live in other states that want to come here. That's one of the nice things about us is that in Arizona, we are a destination that people want to come. Public safety as a whole needs a lot of attention and work. I think, you know, because if you look at the political diversity on the city council, you've got Democrats and Republicans and to differing degrees of where they are in the spectrum within their party as far as left and right. But you see them voting on things together and realizing, Mayor Gallego, we've been in a couple of events together where I've heard her say we're not going to defund the police. She's been supportive. I've been, you know, I love going to law enforcement events. When they ask me to do something for any agency in the valley, by the way, I've emceed events. I've gone whatever I can do to help you in an event or a cause you have. I'm going to do it. But I've been to a bunch of Phoenix PD events where the mayor has been there and she's been the keynote speaker and she makes it a point to say, we don't defund the police here. We're not going to do that. That is a message that is so important. Not from me. You're going to get it from me. You know, I'm going to come on the air and I'm going to defend policing and defend fire, which you don't have to defend. That's one thing about that. Nobody thinks you don't have to defend the fire department. But what we do have to do is pay attention. They're not growing fast enough. They don't have enough firehouses. We don't have enough equipment. We're not hiring enough people. That's got to be rectified. But you're going to get the defense of policing from me. I'm going to explain to you a little deeper when I can about policing and what officers endure and why I think it's such an honorable profession. But to have the city council or the city manager, especially the mayor of the city, come out and say those kinds of things, it's important for the people within those agencies to hear it. It's important for them to know that city leadership has their back. That doesn't mean when a cop does something wrong that it's going to get covered up. No one has ever said that. What it means is you're going to be defended when you do your job. And I just think that it's important. That I love the fact that Phoenix is actively recruiting over 560 officers. I hope they reach their goal. And I would love to see this city be the example that it's been for years and years and years of how a police agency is supposed to behave. And, you know, I just think it's fascinating that there still is negative things being said about Phoenix PD. You pull one thing here or there and say, this is bad or that was bad or this happened and look at this. And you say that's what the entire agency is all about. And it's not even close to being true. What we're going to do in a moment, we do a segment called Did You Hear This? Catch you up on the major headlines. It's happening in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, let's get you caught up on the big headlines. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
Last night, the House passed the Fiscal Responsibility Act, and it's heading to the Senate. But there are senators on both sides who aren't fans of the deal.
There are several senators who say they do not like what was in this deal. They either feel like it doesn't do enough to cut spending, they feel like it doesn't maybe give enough funding to defense spending. That's where Lindsey Graham is. And then there's Bernie Sanders, who doesn't like some of the concessions that the White House gave away.
Will the Senate send the deal to President Biden?
Yeah, I think eventually they will. I think this is going to be something that there will be some amendments proposed. They're going to have some wrangling, but I think they're going to get very, very close. And any changes that might need to happen will be something that will happen. They're pushing up against June 5th. We'll know in very short order. If they vote on some kind of extension, we'll know that they're not close. But I think they're very close.
The Federal Trade Commission is making allegations against Amazon involving major privacy concerns.
Amazon illegally collected voice data from adults and children, according to a civil complaint filed in federal court by the Justice Department on behalf of the Federal Trade Commission. Recordings were being retained indefinitely, according to the FTC.
Does this make you think twice about using Amazon Alexa?
No, it doesn't. You know, I guess I don't take it seriously enough. I know this is going to sound very horrible. I don't take it that seriously, and maybe I should. Maybe I should take it a lot more seriously. I mean, I curse at Alexa, so that's what I do. I curse at Alexa, and you'd be surprised at how she responds, because it's always a polite response, and she doesn't like it, then she's going to tell you she doesn't like it. Don't talk to me that way. It's weird what she knows. But, you know, that's, again, I don't take it that seriously. I curse at Alexa in my house. That's how I entertain myself. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at 11:20 to catch you up on the headlines.
Retail theft is becoming more widespread and violent, and Americans are starting to pay for it.
The Department of Homeland Security says the perps include violent gangs, criminals with ties to international crime syndicates, and even terrorism, calling the wave of organized retail crime an absolute threat to public safety and public health, with these thefts costing the average American family about $500 per year.
What led to this major rise in organized retail theft?
There's a couple of things I think that have happened. I think when we saw that law enforcement in major cities were not enforcing laws in the interest of this defund the police movement and the zone and the Chad and the Chaz, and we allowed these kinds of things to fester, other criminals decided they were going to try it too. They also saw the strength in numbers that were happening when they were looting places, that many people weren't getting caught. You couple that with bad policy that says we're going to give you no bail, so you're going to come into the jail system, we're going to give you a court date, but we're not going to charge you any money, and you're going to be back out on the street. There's not a signal being sent to people that this behavior won't be tolerated. It's not until people realize they're going to pay a heavy price. There's some that are just going to be criminals no matter what. Others will change their mind. That's what we should be doing.
Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Horn joined you and said that the estimated cost of the ESA program would not bankrupt Arizona.
We're required to give an estimate of the cost of educating students in the ESA, but it doesn't provide for us to also to put in how much money we save. By and large, if they're in the public schools or the charter schools, it'll cost us 10% more. If they're educated in the ESAs, it'll cost 10% less.
Will this information affect the way people view the cost of the ESA program?
No, I don't think so at all. People are kind of dug in right now. We know this program, as far as the expansion of it, is very new. What people are going to want to see is results. If we start seeing students perform better, if the kids that have left are performing better and the kids that remain start to perform better, people are going to see balance in a system, and they're going to agree that people have a right. If your child in a structured, just an average school environment thrives, that's terrific. If your child needs a different environment, you should have that option too. I think they'll deem that a success, but I don't think that statistic is going to sway people one way or the other. They're going to want to see other results. Great job, Julia, as always. We'll do it again tomorrow to wrap up the week. We do it at 11:20. I think I like this ESA program because it gives families options. And this is the part of it that this is where our political world is weird. The teachers unions, and I'm going to state this as I do each time in case you're new. I love teachers. I think education is the biggest responsibility as a community. As a community, we give to our children is an education. But I hate the politics of education. I hate it. And so we know that the teacher organizations, AEA, AEU, whatever you want to call them, they are severely left. They are way left. I'm not calling it good or bad. It's an observation. They are very far to the left. They collect dues. They donate and lobby for those left-wing causes. Those are the people they support. That's the direction that they always go. And that's where they are. Except what's interesting is the left claims to be the champions for the working class and the poor among us. That's who is going to benefit from these ESA programs. Families that, no matter how talented your children are, would never be able to go somewhere else if they're not thriving in the situation they're in. When I was in a very fortunate position, when my youngest was struggling a little bit in school, we had options. We put her in this school, we put her in that school, we did this, we did that, till we found the right situation for her. We had the flexibility to do that. I grew up in an environment where we didn't have that kind of flexibility when I was a child. My mom couldn't do that. So this is helping those families give flexibilities to families to make sure your child, as individual as your children are from each other in your own home, how those children individually can thrive in the educational environment. That's what it's all about in the end. In a moment, we're going to talk about the economy, and I've got a few other things that I want to get to before we close it out. We're going to talk about the Fiscal Responsibility Act and some other things. So we'll talk about that coming up in just a couple of seconds.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Now this is cowboy music. Appreciate you spending some time with us. The House passes the Fiscal Responsibility Act. Not everybody's happy. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of people on both sides that are unhappy. It was a truly bipartisan passage in the House of Representatives. 117 people combined between Republicans and Democrats voted no, but it did pass the House. It went to the Senate. Chuck Schumer says they want to get it passed and get it to the president's desk, that there was some good work that was done. Now we're going to test the American people. This is the test, because the American people want things to get done. If you're married, if you're in a serious relationship, or if you ever have been, you understand in that relationship, nobody gets everything they want. And that if you've got a healthy relationship, there is give and take. No one person should be taking all the time when the other person is giving. It's not the way it works. You know how you believe it should be, and your partner knows how they believe it should be. And in the end, you agree together. I wish I had gotten this relationship advice much earlier in my life. It probably would have saved me a lot of heartache and a lot of money. But it is, there was a counselor that said, in a relationship, you're not the problem and your partner isn't the problem. The problem is the problem. Deal with the problem, not blaming each other for it. In American politics, that's all we do. We blame the other side for everything. The problem here is the debt ceiling. The problem here is that America is spending way too much money. Now, Kevin McCarthy, Lindsey Graham, many of the Republicans believe that there should be drastic cuts in spending. But as Lindsey Graham talks about, national defense is what we should be investing in. There's an area that we need to make sure we're maximizing our spending if there's one thing. And I'm going to tell you, in principle, because of my political leanings, I agree with them on both. I really do. But I also understand in the relationship, the way it's structured, there's no way you're getting what you want. Not going to happen. And so what you do is you do the best you can, and then you try to rectify your position. Both sides need to do this, and I believe they will. I think they're going to get this moving. And then once it's done, they're going to go out. Democrats will go out when this is done, and they will claim victory. We save this, we save that, we save this, we save that. There were some things we had to concede because of those horrible Republicans. But we, you know, if we had more Democrats, we wouldn't have to deal with those horrible Republicans. So let's elect Democrats. That's what they're going to say to their base. Republicans are going to go to their base and say, hey, listen, this isn't even close to perfect, but we were able to slow down this horrible spending that's going on. We were able to recoup some of the money from COVID money that wasn't spent, and we were able to roll back a bunch of the money that was given to the IRS, and we were able to do some of these things that we know are good for us. But what we need to do is elect more Republicans. If we had more Republicans in the House, we wouldn't need to worry about the Democrats. If we had control of the Senate, we'd have a much better time in compromising on a deal with the Senate that was run by Republicans. And man, if we had a Republican president, spending cuts would be a lot more friendly in a conversation than they were with this president. And that's what they're going to say to their base. And in the end, all those unaffiliated voters out there are going to have to decide which direction they think the country needs to go. Do we need to take more money from the American? And that's where messaging matters to me. I got to tell you, the older I get, the more I look at messaging in everything I do. I want to be clear in what I say. I want to be kind where I can be kind, but I want to be clear. There's a saying in this building that is all over the place in this building. To be unclear is to be unkind. And so sometimes there are things that need to be said, and you got to be clear. I want to be clear on my positions, but I don't want to be unkind either. But you can't waver on a lot of those things. There's things you just can't waver on. But when you're in a situation where you don't have control of those things, you must compromise. So we'll see. It's going to test the American voter, because will the American voters look at this and Democrats be mad at the Democrats and Republicans mad at the Republicans because you dared make a compromise? Or are those bases going to look there and say, listen, we did the best we could under the circumstances? If I'm a Democrat, I'm telling my Democrat friends, listen, this is the reality. Nancy Pelosi is no longer the Speaker of the House. It's Kevin McCarthy. Do you not understand the huge disparity in policy between those two people? Did you really think you were going to get a Nancy Pelosi debt ceiling deal out of a guy like Kevin McCarthy? If you want those kinds of deals in the House of Representatives, take back the majority. If I was a Democrat, that's exactly what I'd be saying. There is what you want, and there's the reality of how things are. And if I'm McCarthy, I'm saying the exact same thing. You know, if we had the Senate and we had the White House, we wouldn't need to do this. There wouldn't have even been pushing up against this debt limit. We would never be pushing against the deadline. And that's where the messaging comes out for the next election cycle. I know I don't think it's beating a dead horse, but I know I'm being repetitive. But I look at this, and I'll tell you, there are some people that voted no. You know, I met Eli Crane for the first time, Congressman Crane, for the first time, and I'd met him face to face recently at an event. And he is such a thoughtful man. And I will tell you that he is not a selfish guy. What I mean by that is there's not an agenda in what he does other than serving what he thinks are the best needs of the people he represents. He truly is that kind of a guy. So if you're someone that doesn't agree with him, if you're on the other side of the political aisle, you may not agree with a lot of things that he does, but you have to know he's a good man. I just believe that. He's, you know, if you see his military career and his service to the country, this is a guy that just spent his life dedicated to his country. He voted no on this. Andy Biggs, I've known the congressman. I've known Congressman Biggs for years. Got a lot of respect for him. He voted no. I disagree with them. I know they think maybe that something could be better. Maybe they could convince me of that. But I also know Juan Ciscomani, Congressman Ciscomani, who's going to be on the show tomorrow, voted yes and defended his yes vote. And so, again, you have to vote your conscience. But you also have to be a realist. I would love to be able to ask Congressman Biggs or Congressman Gosar or Congressman Crane what it is that they didn't get in this deal that they believe would get past the House, but then also get passed in the Senate and the president would sign. What are the things that were missing that you believe should have been gotten? Because that's the key. Getting it passed in the House is one thing. The Republicans have a majority. It's getting it through past the Senate and it's getting it past the White House. And I'm interested to see how that is. Before we close it out, interesting, more governors are sending troops to the southern border. But the fascinating thing is they are not border governors. So we'll talk about who these governors are and why they're doing it coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Having great conversations on social media right now. Somebody sent me a message with a link to a story about how President Biden is now an advocate for more drilling. And here's why. We're going to drill for more oil all over that. And I laughed so loud and responded to that. Are you kidding me? This is a president that ran on a platform that said no more drilling, no more drilling, no more drilling anywhere. Now he's changing his mind because he's getting crushed in the polls, and voters that voted for him because of his green policy are now cheering that he wants to drill more. That shows you where we're going and the disparity of where we're going here. It is hilarious to see people now say, look at this, he wants to drill, see? I thought drilling was bad. You elected him because we shouldn't drill offshore. We shouldn't drill on federal land. We shouldn't be fracking. We shouldn't have pipelines. You thought this was a great idea until you paid $6 for a gallon of gas. Now, all of a sudden, we're cheering for the new Biden policies on drilling. 24 is going to be a fun year. And here's another area where we've seen the White House shift its policies back to the previous administration to see if it'll work like it did the last time around. And that's the border. Here's the headline. Three more GOP governors are sending National Guard troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. The interesting thing about this is these are not governors in border states. The governors of Virginia, West Virginia, and South Carolina joined a growing list of Republican leaders sending their state National Guard soldiers or other state law enforcement officers to the U.S. border. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin, who is considered a possible presidential aspirant, aspirant, I guess is how it's pronounced, would announce an executive order directing the deployment of 100 Virginia National Guard soldiers and 21 support personnel. The reason why I think this is a big story is the border is no longer a border story. It's not just border states. Every state in the union has become a border state. Every state in the union. You've had cities like Chicago and New York City, Washington, D.C., a lot of cities that have claimed to be sanctuary cities. And it sounds great. Again, I will give it to you. You know, a lot of these things, in theory, sound kind and understanding and loving. And we're a sanctuary city and everyone is welcome here. And we're going to take you in until you start dealing with it, until you start dealing with it in a way where people are pouring into your city and you can't stop it from happening. Welcome to Phoenix. Welcome to Tucson. Welcome to other cities in Arizona where people in buses are being dropped off 6 days a week. I believe it's still happening 6 days a week. White buses pull up at the 44th Street station of the SkyTrain, not the light rail, the SkyTrain that goes into Sky Harbor Airport. There is a station that is kind of, you know, just south of 44th Street in Washington. And at that station, the bus drops off busloads of people and then they get into Sky Harbor Airport. They get their plane tickets. They fly wherever they need to in the country. Some of them pay for their own plane tickets. Some of them charitable organizations pay for the tickets. But they're flying all over the country. This has been happening 6 days a week for a very long time here in Phoenix. We know that busloads of people are dropped off with little or no notification to charitable organizations all over the country. And then when these border states started saying, okay, you're going to have to understand how we feel. And from Texas and Arizona and other places, we were sending busloads of people into New York, into Chicago, into D.C. All of a sudden, those mayors started standing up. And what are they saying? Well, the outgoing mayor that just left in Chicago, Illinois, what you're hearing from Mayor Adams in New York City, what are they yelling? They're yelling at the Biden administration, you have to do something. As a matter of fact, one of the stories has to do with the black community in Chicago outraged that all of this money is being taken away from programs that help their community, and it's being dedicated to migrants because the migrants are being forced into the city, and then they have to be dealt with. So housing and feeding and clothing, and it's money that's being taken away from the communities in Chicago. So you've got leaders in the black community that are going to council meetings that are saying, hey, wait a minute. You are hurting our community for the sake of the migrant community. And you're seeing leadership in these cities going to the White House and saying, you have to do something about this. You have to fix this problem because it's yours to fix. All of a sudden, it's not xenophobic. All of a sudden, it's not horrible. It's not racist. It's not heartless. All of a sudden, some of the old policies, Title VIII and other things that were being done in the previous administration and separated families and all of these things aren't such a bad idea anymore. Now, when you go back to some of the things that worked in the previous administration, but we're going to do it in a better way. We're going to be kinder. We're going to be nicer. But you're seeing when cities around the country are dealing with the reality of it, the problem with it for me isn't, hey, I told you so. It's that you looked at people in Arizona, you looked at communities in Arizona as if they were white supremacist, xenophobic, hateful people. No, they were overwhelmed like you are right now. These are kind, good-hearted people that see the plight of humanity, but they're overwhelmed, just like you are. Welcome to the world of a border state. Now let's get the federal government to fix it. Let's get real legislation from the Congress and real answers and executive orders from the president. Let's do it. I think it's something we can all work on. We are just about out of time. At Broomhead Show is what updates you on what we're doing here on the show, guests and otherwise on Twitter. Please follow that. At Broomhead KTAR is my personal account where you can interact with me. Mike Broomhead, all one word on Instagram. Those are the ways you can find me in between shows. Back tomorrow morning at around 8 a.m. Until then, please have a great day. Take care of each other. God bless.